Paul Rubinstein's feet were cold, standing there in the snow within 50 yards of the cargo helicopters. Their rotors had shut down. The windows were steamed, and he could not see inside. Suddenly, the forward ranks broke off left, and the ranks just in front of him and behind him started right. Paul and Otto joined the men around them. They ran, not knowing where, but as part of a herd. After a moment or so, order grew out of the chaos. The leading ranks broke up by squads to ring the cargo helicopters to the north side of the field. And the element Paul and Otto Hammerschmidt were part of did the same with the helicopters on the south end of the field. Semicircles formed near the cargo doors as they began to open. Paul, Hammerschmidt beside him, joined the rest of the men in their squad in fixing bayonets, then going to high port. The cargo doors stood open. Men, women, children. They were all Chinese. They were all naked. They were all pushed through the cargo bay doors, down the ramps, and into the snow. Paul Rubinstein felt tears welling up in his eyes. Now he recalled what it was the camp resembled.
Oh, God, Abraham, let this not be so.
But he knew it was. Hammerschmidt prodded him. Paul advanced on the naked people, their bodies shaking in the cold like leaves in the wind. Rifle butts hammered into naked backs. Kicks landed on naked legs. Spittle arched from the mouths of some of the Soviet soldiers into the startled, frightened faces. And the naked people, hundreds of them, some crying, some talking as though they were trying to say this was all some terrible mistake, some saucer-eyed in shock, were prodded forward across the snow. Women held infants, the infants' bodies blue-tinged with the cold. Some of the infants tried to suckle. As the dazed herds of humanity left the helicopters, crews shoveled human excrement from the now vacant machines. Gradually, the naked people herded together as they marched on, close to one another for warmth. A woman fell, dropping her baby. Paul started toward her to help her, realized what he was doing, and stopped. Another of the guards ran toward her, kicked at her, and brandished his bayonet toward her baby. The woman caught the baby in her arms and ran stumbling into the herd.
Oh, God, Abraham. Oh, God. I am a Jew marching naked human beings through a snowfield towards a death camp.
Paul's body shook with rage.
What are you doing, Boris Fyodorovich?
As Fyodorovich jumped inside the gull wing, he turned back to the KGB head.
I am using my brain instead of waiting for orders. Try it sometime, comrade.
He turned to his driver.
The submarine pins, now!
The gullwing started ahead, bumping across the greenway and over the curb, just missing one of the armored personnel carriers Fyodorovich had ordered to the pens as well.
We have been tricked by that radio communication. This Wolfgang Heinz, or whoever he speaks Russian, I would wager. And he tricked us. Whoever he is, this tall, lean, courageous man has so far outsmarted all of us.
Olaf Karenin would be hard put to explain it all away.
Faster!
The gullwing moved ahead. John Rourke stepped through the doorway from the People's Institute for Marine Studies and onto the walkway. Alarms were sounding, even more loudly, it seemed, than before. The street between the walkways was jammed with fast-moving gullwings. Most of the gullwings had running boards with armed men perched on them. And many of the soldiers carried AKM-96 assault rifles. He tucked back into the doorway.
What the hell do we do now, Dr. Rourke?
He looked at Aldridge and smiled.
Join all the happy people. Come on.
Rourke left the doorway and crossed the walkway to the street. As the first likely-looking gullwing passed, he jumped for the running board, his assault rifle slung under his right arm.
Come on!
But there was no time to look to see if Sam was coming. As he reached the running board, Rourke grabbed the right ear of one of the men clinging to the gullwing. With a quick yank, the man fell away. The gullwing bounced as the vehicle careened over the man's body. Beside him, another of the soldiers grabbed for him. Rourke turned to struggle against him and saw Sam clinging to the soldier's back, his fingertips gouging into the man's eye sockets.
Grab onto something else!
Rourke's left elbow smashed the hapless Russian in the face. The man's body fell away to the road surface. On the opposite side, the driver's side, one of the three Russians who clung there was trying to level a Sti-20 pistol. Rourke fired first. One of the other two men jumped, landing just behind the gullwing on his knees. The AKM-96 slung across the soldier's back came up, firing. Glass, or whatever it was that formed the rear windshield of the gullwing, shattered. The third Russian soldier took part of his comrade's burst and fell away.
Sam! Doc!
Rourke stabbed the little detonics toward the man, bracing it on the roof. As he readied to fire, another gullwing crashed over the kneeling soldier. Rourke swung the detonics through the rear window of the gullwing and opened up on the half-dozen armed men and driver. He emptied his little pistol into the gull wing. Sam hung on beside him and stabbed the muzzle of his liberated AKM-96 through the shot-out glass. The gull wing swerved erratically now, sideswiping other vehicles on the roadway. The driver was still alive. Rourke drew the detonics from his left side holster. The gull wing driver's right temple dotted red. The head snapped away.
Sam! Get that door handle beside you, quick!
Rourke looked back, and Sam was gone for a moment. Then the gull wing slowed.
I made it!
The gull wing doors were almost completely open now, and Rourke swung inside. Bodies of dead Russians littered the seats and the floor.
Turn us around! We're going the wrong way!
Yes, sir!
Rourke nearly lost his balance at the gull wing, the door still closing. U-turned in the middle of the street, sideswiping another gull wing. Rourke grabbed up an AKM-96 from the hands of a dead Marine Spetsnaz and rammed the muzzle through the shot-out rear windshield. He crouched in the seat, ready.
Come on, step on it, huh?
These things don't have any guts, Doctor.
Well, pretend they do. Put it to the floor and drive. Hey, you think this thing would keep rolling if we knocked the doors off, Sam?
Knock the doors off?
Hit the door controls. Come on, do it!
Hurriedly, Rourke began to relieve the dead Marine Spetsnaz personnel of their weapons. Two more AKM-96s, six Sti-20 pistols, and thankfully, spare magazines for the AKM-96s. He stuffed as many of these as he could into the magazine carrier beside his musette bag, then took a second magazine carrier from one of the dead men and began filling it for Sam. Rourke looked over his shoulder as he knelt behind the driver's seat.
Those two APCs were the third one behind him. The one with the hatch open?
You're not... Oh, my God!
That's right. Now, thread the needle right between those first two. If the doors go, they go. Now, we need to be able to clear out of this fast. You got any idea how many guys they have inside one of those APCs?
Too many, I bet, Doctor.
Rourke smiled. Sam was threading the needle.
Take your right hand off the wheel for a second.
He slipped the shoulder strap for the magazine carrier over Sam's hand, along his arm, and over his head.
Just a little something for you. Many happy returns.
Rourke eyed the two APCs.
Close your eyes when we hit and step hard on the gas.
Rourke passed his left arm across his back, sheltering the Marine as best he could with his own body, his right arm up to protect his face. The open gull wing doors were torn away, and he could smell smoke. As the doors went, Rourke opened his eyes. Shards of the glass lay all around them.
Are we out of it? Step on it! Right for that third APC! Then cut left and just do what I do!
The gull wing was on fire somewhere. He couldn't tell where. Rourke grabbed up the weapons and spare ammo. They were almost to the third APC.
Cut the wheel left, now!
The gull wing swerved hard left. Rourke came up out of his crouch, almost losing his balance, but holding it. He was beside the ragged aperture where the right side gull wing door had been. Jagged metal was all that remained.
Close as you can to that APC, Marine!
The gull wing swerved right, and Rourke jumped. He reached for one of the handholds along the side of the bodywork and held on. Sam jumped out after him. They started for the top hatch, praying it was still open. As Rourke reached the top of the APC's superstructure, the top hatch was closing. He threw himself toward it, both hands going to the exterior hatch opening, his body weight throwing it back and away from the direction in which it was closing.
Sam! Get some fire in there now!
There was an officer's mess tent, but Michael Rourke avoided that. Instead, he walked past the command tent as often as he dared as part of his irregular patrol of the camp. As yet, there was no sign of his father or Natalia. On his third pass of the command tent, he stopped. In the open flap of the command tent stood the self-proclaimed Hero Marshal, Vladimir Karamazov, in shirt sleeves, dark slacks, and high boots, a shoulder holster under his left arm. Michael judged the distance as under 20 yards. With either or both of the military Beretta 9mm under his uniform tunic, Michael Rourke could have taken him at twice the distance. The man on whose orders Michael's wife, Madison Rourke, and their unborn child died just stood there. He was speaking with a colonel, the two of them just talking. Michael Rourke reached for his tunic. He opened one of the buttons with his gloved fingers. Michael recalled the story his father told of a man he once knew who, before the United States entered World War II, had the opportunity to kill Adolf Hitler. The man was standing less than 30 feet from the beast. The man in the story was armed and had killed before. But his orders were not to kill Hitler. Hitler lived to slaughter millions. Michael's right hand was beneath his tunic. His fingers curled around the butt of one of the Berettas. The man in John Rourke's story was Jewish. After the war, when the truth of Hitler's atrocities came to light, the man took up the same gun he carried the day he could have shot Hitler. The man turned the gun on himself but did not kill himself. Instead, he shot his gun hand, so the hand would be forever useless. The last time John Rourke saw him, the man was working for one of the agencies that searched the world for the missing war criminals. His right hand was withered and dead. Michael tightened his fist on the butt of the Beretta. Karabatsov stood there, talking, orating perhaps on his greatness, his plans for world conquest. Vladimir Karamazov just stood there. Michael Rourke wondered if someday he would shoot his own right hand. But this day he came as a rescuer, not an assassin. He turned to walk away, but looked over his shoulder once more.
Someday, Karamazov, I'll be back as an assassin.
Michael Rourke walked away. Sergeant Bill Aitken ignored the fact that some of his people were not part of the Corps. He also ignored the fact that some of them were not even Americans. He raised his AKM-96 in his right hand.
Marines! Follow me!
Aitken broke into a dead run, leading his beleaguered companions toward the Marine Spetsnaz behind the fences barricading the submarine pens. The defenses here were impressive, but built to repel any attack coming from the huge lagoon beneath which the submarines and the scout subs traveled to enter and leave the Russian stronghold. The defenses were not designed to thwart an attack from behind, from within the stronghold. Aitken's first two bursts cut down a Marine Spetsnaz officer. He was aware of the fact that had his soul inhabited a Russian body, he might have been one of these Marine Spetsnaz. He was convinced that being a Marine, a fighter, was his karma, in his blood.
Just fucking graze me.
He was at the top of the fence. He flipped over it and dropped down onto the back of a Russian armed only with a Stai 20. Aitken's people were over the fence, and he started forward again, toward where the scout subs were kept. He could run one of those, he thought, and so could most of his people. With the scout subs, maybe at least a few of them would actually get away.
Come on, Marines! This isn't some damn walk to the chow line! Hoorah!
Ahead, he could see the water. Armored personnel carriers streamed from the dome for the military complex. John Rourke knew the energy barrier was down. He cut the levers into a sharp right and stomped the APC's accelerator pedal all the way to the floorboards. The APC's rear end fishtailed. Aldridge knelt beside him, reloading his pistols for him.
We have guns like these. We officers carry them for ceremonial stuff like parades. I didn't think anybody actually shot them.
Oh yeah, well just think of me as an antique collector.
Rourke's eyes were riveted to the video used to guide the APC. The tunnel leading from the command complex was nearly choked with APCs, and Rourke was going against the flow.
Hang on again. I'm using the sidewalk. It's the only way.
Rourke angled the massive vehicle right, bouncing the curb, sweeping aside a gull wing that had evidently pulled onto the sidewalk for safety. The gull wing flipped up and rolled into the path of an oncoming APC. Rourke kept driving. He could see the point where the energy barrier could be activated.
What the hell are we doing when we get inside?
Straight for the officers' residences on our left. I get out and go inside after Natalia, and...
Hey, that sounds like a Russian name.
Rourke grinned.
She's a major in the KGB, but she retired 500 years ago, and she was on our side even before that.
What?
Oh, you'll like her, don't worry. But you stay... Whoa! You stay inside and wait for me. Give me about 10 minutes tops. If we're not out, we won't be coming out.
I got your magazines loaded. You're just dead even. No more of that funny ammunition in the box.
Right. How are you for activating some of the weapons console on this sucker?
Rourke took both pistols back and stuffed them into his belt. He wouldn't be using the Stai 20s. He didn't have time to shoot people twice and then wait around for them to fall asleep.
I can do it. These aren't too different from some of our stuff. If I could read the damn language.
What you need?
That one.
Rourke took his eyes from the video screen for a split second.
That's fire control. The one next to it arms the system. You guys got death rays yet?
Death rays?
Yeah. When I was a kid, I used to see Buck Rogers science fiction movies on TV. Rogers was transported into the future and they had death rays.
We don't have any death rays. Neither do the Russians.
Yeah, well, maybe it's a good old-fashioned cannon. Any idea?
Want to find out?
Sure, but not now. Right now, we're an APC going against the flow of traffic, maybe for some reason. But if we open fire, we're the enemy. So hang in there.
The energy barrier was dead ahead. Some kind of Marine Spetsnaz traffic cop waved at them to stop. The Marine Spetsnaz jumped aside just before their APC could flatten it. Rourke crashed the APC against the plexiglass booth for the guards and pitched it into the roadbed. He brushed aside the last of the gull wings and was on open road, the officer's residence they wanted dead ahead. If Natalia was there, Karenin would be too, if he hadn't been killed by the sharks. John Rourke was on the brakes as the APC rolled over the curb and onto the lawn fronting the officer's residence.
Remember, stay here.
I came along to help you find your way inside, remember? I was there.
Rourke looked at the Marine captain.
Sam, you go inside there, you might never come out again. I couldn't have gotten this far without you. And if you stay with the APC and I do get Natalia out, then at least we got a chance to reach the submarine pens and maybe make it out. If we leave this thing unattended, we can't count on it being here to get us out. You understand?
Yeah, Doctor. Don't get killed.
I don't intend to. Now give me 10 minutes. You need my watch?
No, I can keep track of time.
Rourke started up through the hatchway.
All clear forward and aft, too. At least on the video screens.
Lock the hatch from the inside and check that all the other entryways are secure.
Yes, sir.
Rourke, bristling with weapons, slammed the hatch behind him and moved across the APC's superstructure. He jumped from the superstructure of the APC to the grass fronting the officer's residence. The entire military command dome seemed empty. A gull wing was trying for the tunnel, perhaps to join the battle by the submarine pens. The red emergency lights were a little brighter here, and there were more of them. He broke into a dead run for the main entrance. Sam told him one valuable piece of intelligence as they eluded the APCs on the streets and made for the tunnel leading into the dome. All field-grade officers were given top-floor apartments. Karenin was a major. There were a half dozen of the scout subs at dockside in the pens. Martha and Aitken, after setting up a ragged but they hoped sufficiently effective defense perimeter, asked for volunteers who felt they could crew the little subs. There was a sufficient number to handle half again as many subs as were available. Martha ordered them to board, assuming the scout subs were empty of crew. But not taking any chances, she sent a party armed with AKM-96s ahead into each of the craft first. Aitken had been mentally logging the minutes. Rourke was taking his sweet time rescuing his friend. Aitken made a decision.
Lieutenant!
Sergeant!
Martha turned to him, one of the Soviet rifles in her right fist.
Sarge?
You have things in hand here. I got something to do.
Where are you going, Sarge?
After Rourke. Like he said about the lady, she would have done the same for him. Well, he did the same for us.
Aitken slipped his rifle forward on its sling and broke into a jog trot toward the fence. When he reached the fence, he looked behind him. Feng, the Chinese, who served as their guide, two of his Marines, and another Chinese, the one who was probably some kind of spy, were tailing after him.
What the hell are you doing here?
You are their commander, not mine. And, at any event, we volunteered. These rifles are useless once our people are aboard the small submarines, so...
The Chinese smiled. Aitken just shook his head and kept moving. Fyodorovich climbed into his gull wing again. The scout subs that pulled away from the docks would have all of the escapees aboard. He leaned forward to his driver.
The military dome, and hurry!
From his belt, he took his communicator.
This is Captain Fyodorovich of the Marine Spetsnaz. I request a frequency link with naval defense. Quickly! This is a maximum priority.
The submarines could get them, even if the scout subs made it out of the lagoon and into open water. It took some time for the submarines to launch, and they could make no real speed in the lagoon. The scout subs could easily outmaneuver and outdistance them, but once out of the lagoon, there would be no chance of the scout subs evading the larger craft or defending themselves against the superior weapons. However, he knew one man would not be aboard the scout subs. He was beginning to think there was no Wolfgang Heinz of German intelligence. He had to be the John Rourke of whom the Russian woman spoke, and this John Rourke would not leave her behind. The frequency cleared.
I must speak with the duty officer for the submarine pens immediately. This is Boris Fyodorovich, Marine Spetsnaz captain, and this is a maximum priority communication. I repeat.
Aitken circled around to the far side of the scout sub pens. There were more than 24 armored personnel carriers there, some of them already moving.
So far, so good.
The crews of the APCs stood about their vehicles, their expressions ranging from intensity to boredom. The crew's individual weapons leaned against the sides of their vehicles or hung over crew members' shoulders.
That one.
Aitken gestured toward the APC nearest his five volunteers. It had a clear means of getting from the pens onto the street, and the crew looked particularly vulnerable.
Do what I do, unless I do something dumb. Move out.
The small band moved ahead, angling between the hedges separating the drive, ringing the dome from the greenway on which the APCs were parked. There was no traffic on this portion of the driveway, all non-military traffic barred, he assumed, because of the military emergency. The group stopped. Aitken slung his rifle back. He gestured with his hands toward the six crewmen of the APC. His volunteers nodded, understanding, he hoped, the need for total silence. Aitken moved from the hedgerow, breaking into a crouching run, eyeballing the largest of the six men, and taking him as his own target. The Marine Spetsnaz started to turn toward him, as if sensing him. The Russian started to open his mouth, as if to cry out. Aitken slammed his full body weight against the man, hands going for the throat, thumbs closing over the windpipe. John Rourke reached the top floor, seven stories up, without encountering resistance. He knew he was walking into a trap. He stood just inside the doorway leading from the stairwell, the dim light perfect for his eyes, less perfect for the eyes of his adversaries, he hoped. He could see along the length of the hall. The nearest door bore the name of another major. Rourke almost felt like writing the Soviet High Command a thank you note for being so accommodating as to place names on the apartment doors. He reached into the case with the spare magazines for the AKM-96s, took a partially spent one, and edged a half dozen of the caseless 4.86mm cartridges from the magazine lips. He put the magazine away in the case and hefted the six cartridges. He hurled them into the hallway, across the slick-looking tiled floor. Nothing happened. Rourke glanced at his Rolex. 3 minutes gone, seven or so until Sam, if he followed orders, took the APC and ran for it. Slowly, keeping to the stairwell side, he walked ahead. On the way up the building, he peered through the small, reinforced plexiglass window in each door and saw nothing. No activity. It seemed the same here. He was beginning to think Karenin had lied, but at the time, there was no need.
She has to be here. She has to be here.
Rourke stopped. He saw the right combination of Cyrillic characters. Olaf Karenin, Major. It was the door at the end of the hallway, commanding the entire hall.
Ah, now I get it.
He stepped away from the wall, swinging the second AKM-96 forward as well. He stood in the hallway.
Karenin! I'm here!
John!
Karenin! Come on!
Karenin's door swung in. Rourke stopped in mid-stride, his body tensing.
If you want the woman, John Rourke, come and get her! Now!
John, he's waiting for you!
John Rourke broke into a dead run for the door, knowing he was doing what Karenin wanted. Rourke didn't care as he threw himself through the doorway in a roll. Gunfire roared from the end of the apartment's narrow hallway. John Rourke fired both assault rifles and was up, throwing himself against the opposite wall.
You missed me, bastard!
I did not miss her!
If you killed her, you kill yourself now, because it'll be easier for you than having me do it.
He kept edging along the hallway wall. The rifle in his left fist stabbed forward into a red-tinged grayness. The rifle in his right hand raised slightly and almost against the wall.
Are you coming for me, John Rourke?
I am coming for you, Olaf Karenin! Ah!
Suddenly, the narrow hallway was bathed in brilliant light, and John Rourke could see Karenin in the doorway, an assault rifle in his fists. John Rourke stepped away from the wall, squinting against the sudden brightness. He fired, both assault rifles simultaneously. The image of Olaf Karenin shattered.
Oh, shit! A mirror!
At the far left corner of his peripheral vision, John Rourke saw the open door and started to wheel toward it and at the same time throw his body left, but Karenin's assault rifle spoke. John Rourke felt something hammering into his chest and abdomen. His body slammed back against the hallway wall as the assault rifles fell from his grasp. Rourke's body skidded along the wall. Rourke's left leg swept from under him, and he fell. Rourke grabbed for the twin stainless Detonix pistols. He stabbed his left hand forward as Karenin stepped into the hallway, then his right. Karenin wheeled toward him, the muzzle of his AKM-96 coming up.
You were easier to kill than I thought you would be. Two full-length mirrors and a field floodlight. Now the woman is mine.
John Rourke fired both Detonix pistols. Karenin's body crashed back along the wall, his AKM-96 discharging into the floor. Karenin's rifle fell from his grasp and clattered to the floor.
Die, motherfucker!
John Rourke sagged against the wall. He looked down at his stomach and the blood-drenched uniform tunic. His left lung ached, and it was hard to breathe. These were mortal wounds, he realized. Blood sprayed against his hand as he coughed. He leaned his head heavily against the wall. He had very little time until loss of blood brought on unconsciousness, then death. He let the Detonics pistol in his left hand fall to the floor, moving his left hand over his left thigh. More blood. But he didn't think anything was broken. The leg should still work. Rourke leaned forward as pain surged through him.
Natalia.
There was no answer. He forced himself to his knees. One of his little Detonics pistols was still in his right fist. The other lay on the floor beside him. The stainless steel of the two pistols splattered with his blood. No artery was hit. He would have been under a quicker death sentence if so. He found spare magazines for the pistols, and from force of habit, saved the emptied ones.
Michael.
Michael could use them if Natalia got away. She could give them to Michael. He lowered the hammers on the fresh-loaded pistols, wiped the blood from them against his right thigh, and holstered them. Rourke started to crawl toward the two AKM-96s he dropped, his head swimming, dizziness seizing him. He closed his eyes, waited until the dizziness passed. He crawled, at last reaching the first, then the second of the assault rifles. He safetied each of them, slung them cross-body this time so they couldn't be lost to him. The wound in his right arm bled slightly, a flesh wound. It seemed to extend along the length of his forearm. He wondered what happened to the bullet, or was it still inside him? It really didn't matter. There were enough bullets inside him already. One more wouldn't matter. Rourke pushed himself to his feet, falling against the wall. He pushed away from the wall, his left hand pressing hard against the wall for support. Awkwardly, he stepped over Karenin's body, nearly fell, then stopped, leaning heavily against the bedroom doorframe. Natalia lay on the bed, her perfect right cheek bruised, a rag balled in her mouth, but her head was moving.
You were right. We aren't getting out of this one. Not together, anyway.
Rourke collapsed on the bed next to Natalia. As he fell onto the bed, she opened her eyes, and she wished she were dead. His left hand moved, holding the knife in his bloodied fingers. For a moment, she was afraid for herself, and she was ashamed of that. He moved the knife perilously close to her. But in the end, he brought the primary edge of it down against the headboard where her left wrist was bound. He severed the plastic cord. She was free.
John! John!
Bags strapped to my back. It's clothes for you and your guns. Take my stuff. Give my guns to Michael. The knife. You keep the knife. And tell Sarah. Tell her. I always... She knew.
She took the knife in her left hand and cut her right wrist free, then freed her ankles. She moved her body into a fetal position beside his head and held his face against her. 5 minutes later, Natalia packed the abdominal wounds with the blanket, folded into a tight, thick rectangle, then secured it over the wounds with the uniform belt Rourke wore. The wound along his outer right forearm she bound with strips cut from the bedsheet, spraying it and the abdominal wound with the German antiseptic healing agent taken from Rourke's musette bag. The leg wounds she bandaged like the arm, spraying them as well. Neither the leg wounds nor the wound to his arm were even potentially fatal unless they were just allowed to bleed. The abdominal wounds, they were fatal. Natalia had dressed quickly in the uniform he brought for her, buckled on her L-frame revolvers, and strapped on her Balisong knife. She took both AKM-96s from him and started down the hallway to the front door of the apartment to make certain the way was clear. Natalia fired a burst into the corridor and tucked back. She returned fire and then ran back along the apartment hallway, back to the bedroom.
John, you must get up!
He was still conscious.
John, get up!
He raised his head and looked at the Rolex on his wrist.
John!
You have 2 minutes. That APC out on the lawn. He'll wait another 2 minutes.
Natalia drew him up from the bed. Her own height made it easier to hold him up, his left arm drawn over her shoulders.
Forget me. Tell Annie I love her. Tell Michael. The same. Tell Sarah I always loved her.
Never! Shut up, John! You can tell her yourself!
Rourke's left arm pulled tightly around her.
And I love you. I never loved anyone the way I love you.
Leave me a gun. I'll hold them off. Get out through the window. There's a balcony out there. You can work your way down.
No!
John Rourke tried to push her away from him.
Leave me. I'm dead.
No, you are not. You taught me to never give up. So, goddammit, you can't either.
Natalia Anastasia Temerovna grabbed his left arm. He was weaving, about to collapse again. She hauled his left arm across her shoulders and started for the window. Aitken turned the stolen armored personnel carrier into the tunnel. Little traffic except for gull wings. The plexiglass guard booth at the end of the tunnel was all but destroyed, the energy barrier down, he hoped, inoperable.
Hold tight! We're going through!
He stomped the accelerator and aimed for dead center in the tunnel. The few gull wings swerved away to give him a wide berth. Aldridge cleared the tunnel. He saw an APC parked on the grass near the officer's residence on the far side of the dome. He cut left. The APC was ringed by four gull wings. Men hid behind the gull wings. As he watched, the APC's cannon opened fire. One of the gull wings exploded. A fireball belched toward the dome roof. At least two men uselessly fired assault rifles toward the APC.
Let's get our weapon systems out of those gull wings!
He'd bet Aldridge was inside the defending APC. On his video screen, he saw something happening on the top floor balcony of the officer's residence beyond the little firefight.
My God, I think that's Rourke!
John Rourke started to fall, Natalia beside him.
No, I have you, John.
He closed his eyes tight against the pain, almost stumbled again, and tried to walk with her. It was easier now to go along with her than to further delay her by insisting she leave him behind. He would likely die on the way down, or certainly inside the APC if they made it that far.
How are you feeling, John? Don't slip away from me, please.
Oh, I'm fine. I'm much better. You always were a good nurse. How much further?
Not much further. Getting through that window was the tough part, wasn't it?
He looked around them. He didn't recall getting through the window at all. But here they were on the balcony of Karenin's apartment. There had to be a doorway to it, but he hadn't seen where it was. The emergency lights were still on, and that was good. Aldridge, Martha, the Chinese, all of the escaped prisoners would be long gone by now. Still, Natalia was amazing in her adaptability, her wealth of technical knowledge. She could steal one of the little submarines. She could get away. He knew she could get away.
All right. We're at the railing, John. Now I have to make some sort of harness so I can get you down. The slings from the rifles will do it, I think.
He nodded. His mouth was terribly dry. There was a second APC down there now on the grass.
Was there cannon fire a minute ago?
Yes, that APC. The Marine you spoke about. He vaporized one of the Soviet cars. He must be pretty good. I can't wait until you introduce us. You'll do that, won't you, John?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
Good. Now I'm counting on you. Don't forget.
I...
He leaned forward against the railing. It was at waist height.
Careful! Let me do this now. You just stand still, John.
Yes, Mother.
Natalia started putting the harness of rifle slings around him. She kissed him on the cheek. He heard something, shook his head, and turned around.
They're in the apartment, Natalia. Get out of here.
Not without you.
Rourke turned himself around, leaning against the railing now.
Give me a rifle.
She had two of them. His? She gave him a rifle. Natalia started to throw herself in front of him. John Rourke pushed her aside.
Jump for it!
Rourke lurched toward the window, the light brighter than it had ever been. He fired the AKM-96. Natalia opened up with hers. Rourke saw Fyodorovich and at least two other men coming through the window.
John!
Why did she scream? Fyodorovich had an assault rifle. Rourke couldn't bring his arms up enough to get to his guns. He was trying. He knew he was trying. Natalia screamed his name again. Or was it the same scream? Fyodorovich's rifle fired. The stupid little Stai 208 fired. John Rourke's head suddenly hurt very badly, and he knew he was falling backwards. Natalia ran toward him in slow motion, and she was moving her mouth, saying something he knew, but he couldn't hear the words. Just the tremendously loud explosion inside his head. It just kept going on and on and on, and he was falling. Natalia's fingertips touched his fingertips, and then they weren't touching, and the blur in front of his eyes was suddenly faster, and he saw the wall of the building, and he saw Natalia looking down at him, and he thought she was screaming, and then everything just stopped, and there wasn't anything anymore at all.
I think he's dead, Captain.
Damn it. We didn't come this far.
They got the woman, I know that. But I didn't hear any more gunfire.
Fuck it, we're taking him with us. Move it, Marines. Get back in the damn APC and follow orders, you and you.
He looked at the two Chinese.
Get in there with him. Keep tight on us.
Aldrich clambered up the APC's superstructure as two of his Marines hauled Rourke's body out from beneath the trees through which he fell from the top floor of the officer's residence. Rourke's face was covered with blood, and if he was breathing, Aldrich couldn't detect any sign of it. No pulse in the neck.
Shit.
He called to the Marine he left inside his APC.
Lay some rounds on that balcony now!
He didn't want to kill the woman Rourke died trying to save, but he didn't need his men shot either.
Shit!
The APC's cannon roared, and Aldrich covered his ears with both hands, the superstructure vibrating under him. Through the view screen, Aldrich saw Aitken and the two Chinese were into the other APC, pulling the hatch closed. Aldrich and his two men hoisted Rourke into a seat and strapped his body in tight.
Blow that damn balcony to hell!
Yes, sir!
The APC vibrated around him, and he lost his balance.
Shit!
Sam caught himself, then slammed into the control seat and gunned the engine. The second APC, with Bill Aitken at the controls, was already moving. Aldrich worked the levers, and the APC started rolling forward and left. Aitken's APC led the way. Aldrich stomped the accelerator and followed, aiming the APC for the tunnel. Natalia crawled from where she fell as chunks of debris rained around her, her revolvers in both hands, her left leg numbing from the Sti 20 round she took. She saw him for an instant as her consciousness waned. John Rourke's body caught up in some trees, and as she watched, it slipped from the boughs that cradled it and fell to the ground below. There was no movement. There was no life. She turned away from him, firing her empty revolvers as Fyodorovich and his men charged toward her.
Kill me.
John Rourke was dead. Natalia Anastasia Tyamarovna knew she had died inside, too. Aldrich turned out of the tunnel, Aitken's APC dead ahead of him and moving fast. He worked the levers and swerved the APC into an almost too tight hook onto the right side of Aitken's APC, then accelerated, his rear end fishtailing, evening out and passing his sergeant.
How we doing behind us? Talk to me.
Sergeant Aitken's APC is accelerating too, Captain. He's right on our tail. Don't see anything. Belay that! Got five, maybe six APCs just turning out of the tunnel and about the same number of gull wings.
These guys never give up, do they?
He knew they didn't. His people and their people had been fighting the continuing battle of World War III since the night it all went down, almost 500 years ago, if he remembered his dates right. They never gave up. You killed them, and more came. You blew up one of their submarines, and there was always another one. And now they had missiles, the nuclear ones, just like 5 centuries ago, and they'd win. He felt a familiar pressure around his eyes as he drove. Captain Sam Aldrich led a commando raid against the Stalin, one of the big ones, one of the monster submarines. And they rode the damn thing almost into port to place their explosives and hit the missile factory, but they didn't make it. They got gassed, and he awoke a prisoner. His captors played with him, using electric shock and sensory deprivation. His dreams became more horrible than being awake, worse than the horrible existence of living in a cage. Ahead stood a line of gull wings blocking the roadway and an APC behind them.
Cannon that APC! Kill it!
Yes, sir!
Sam floored the accelerator.
Fire, damn it!
Aye, aye!
The cannon fired. Smoke and fire engulfed three of the gull wings. The enemy armored personnel carrier fired back. Aldrich swerved his machine hard right. When the explosion came, he almost lost control, skidded, jumped the sidewalk, and sideswiped the building walls on his right. Every bone in the two bodies felt as if they were vibrating.
Shoot now!
His gunner fired as the Marine at the rear monitoring the video screen shouted,
They got Aitken! God damn him! Nothing!
The road surface beside the enemy APC turned into a rising fireball, gushing toward them and away from them along the tunnel ceiling. Aldrich kept the accelerator to the floorboard, threw the fireball past the enemy vehicle.
Disabled? What? Get specific!
Sergeant Aitken's APC got flipped over on its side and rammed into the far tunnel wall! The superstructure's half blown away! They got him, Captain! The motherfuckers!
Let's see they don't get us! I'm sorry, Herb.
He glanced at the Marine beside him.
You making it, Bernie?
Yes, sir, making it. Just.
Aldrich could see the fence ahead. There were gull wings there, and there were troops behind every imaginable sort of barricade, and there was a phalanx of APCs closing from the right. He cut left, jumped the curb, punched the Russian machine through the fence leading to the main sub-pens. He was starting to slow since he was traversing ground now and not the hard road surface.
APC's closing fast, Captain! Those other six are still dead behind us!
Just pray the guns and the scout subs are waiting for us and be ready to move!
How about the dead guy, sir?
Aldrich looked at Corporal Bernie Richter.
The body goes with us, right?
Yes, sir!
Aldrich could see the tunnel between the scout pens and the lagoon dead ahead. Nothing beyond two gull wings blocked it.
Vaporize them, Bernie!
You got it, Captain!
The cannon fired. The pulse of the thing made the superstructure vibrate, the two gull wings vanishing in a ball of flame the next instant. Aldrich drove through the flames, knowing he couldn't stop now.
Getting a readout off the rear tires, Captain! They're hot! Shit! They're on fire!
Hang in there, Herb!
He realized his knuckles were going stiff on the levers. His neck ached. His eyes burned because he couldn't blink. It was a narrow walkway here, not made for traffic at all. He bounced a curb.
Be ready!
Come on, baby!
He was starting to lose the steering. The lagoon was dead ahead, just beyond another APC.
Fire around it! Make a ring around it! Do it now!
The APC shook almost out of control as Aldrich slowed her, the lagoon less than 100 yards ahead.
Now! Hold on to something tight!
The APC fishtailed, the rear end swept right. The crew braced. If Sam did it right, maybe they wouldn't die just yet.
Oh, you hit the thing, sir! Shit! She's gone into the lagoon!
Out!
Aldrich hit his seatbelt release and slid from behind the controls, their APC smoking, on fire. Flames licked from some of the overhead panels. And he could smell burning insulation. He released Rourke's harness and grabbed up Rourke's body.
Up the hatch! Watch for enemy fire and grab him!
Right, sir!
Richter disappeared through the hatchway as Herb Kozlowski helped Aldrich with the dead man.
Ready, sir!
They pushed Rourke's body through the hatchway.
Got him, sir! Sir, we got company! Those damn APCs!
Aldrich was the next one up, the AKM-96 going ahead of him. They were 10 yards from the water.
Pass him down!
His two Marines slid Rourke's body down. Aldrich got the body over his right shoulder. It was stupid, hauling a dead body. He did it anyway, running, his two men outdistancing him, dropping into kneeling positions beside the water at the end of the dockside. Gunfire tore into the dock bumpers.
Into the water, guys! Move it now!
Aldrich tossed his rifle away and jumped, letting the body slip from his shoulder as he hit the water, tucked down. He never liked diving. He opened his eyes. Rourke's body wasn't floating. As Aldridge's head broke the surface, he dragged Rourke up.
He's alive, damn it! All right!
Sam grabbed Rourke across the chest and under the left armpit.
If you can hear me, take a deep breath, Rourke!
Aldrich pulled Rourke with him under the surface. Air escaped Rourke's mouth in great bubbles.
The damn APC is firing.
Sam broke the surface and saw two of the monster subs crossing the lagoon. Aldrich could see Richter, but not Herb Kozlowski.
Herb! Where are you? Kozlowski! Kozlowski!
Captain!
Aldrich swallowed water. Sam twisted in the churning lagoon. One of the scout subs came dead on for them. But Aldrich could see Martha on the deck, another of the escapees at the deck gun open fire. Martha disobeyed orders being in this close. He'd kill her after he kissed her. He swam to the sub. A line snaked out. He caught the coil with his right hand and twisted the coil around his upper body and roared.
Reel us in! Get him first! He's still alive! Or he was a second ago!
Aldrich slipped the rope from his own body, shoving Rourke up under the rail. Martha and another woman and a Chinese reached for him.
Get him some mouth-to-mouth! He could have a shot-out lung! Be careful!
Aldrich was halfway up himself when the hands reached for him and he fell forward to his knees onto the deck plates. APCs fired from the dock. Monster subs closed with both their deck guns firing.
Richter and Kozlowski, you see him?
Martha turned away from him, snaking out the line again. Aldrich vomited up water across the deck plates, then looked after her. There was something wrong with Richter. The same rope that reeled Sam in hauled in the other two Marines. He grabbed the rope and started to pull. Richter came up first. His left arm was limp and his mouth trickled blood. As Aldridge and Martha reached down to Kozlowski, the deck guns of the monster subs opened up again. Kozlowski's body jerked, slammed against the scout sub, then fell away.
Kowalski!
He's dead, Sam! Come on!
Aldridge looked at his lieutenant, then back to the water. He could see Kozlowski floating face down. Aldridge clambered to his feet, lurched toward the deck gun, shoved the Marine away from it, and swung it around.
Eat shit, you bastards!
He started pumping the deck gun, the pounding of it something he could feel. Martha hammered him with her fists.
Damn it, Captain! You gonna stay up and swim?
He looked at her.
Lieutenant, you got balls. Let's get below.
He secured the deck gun and headed for the main hatch. They were going home. Survivalist Midwake is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1988, Jerry Ahern. Published by arrangement with Jerry and Sharon Ahern. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Thomas Penny, Eric Messner, Nanette Savard, Elizabeth Jernigan, David Coyne, Michael Glenn, M.B. Van Dorn, Michael John Casey, Richard Rowan, Michael Replogle, Dylan Lynch, Ren Casey, Colleen Delaney, Kate Foster, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Timothy Hayes Lynch. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Rogers and Greg Reinfeld. Adapted for graphic audio by Timothy Lynch. If you enjoyed The Survivalist, be sure to look for Ryder Stacey's Doomsday Warrior, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another Graphic Audio title.
Graphic Audio presents DC Comics Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Be careful, Barry.
Don't worry. I'll be right back. My God.
Why am I brought from universe to watch his destruction?
Anyone have any idea what this is about?
I am the Monitor, and I brought you here to save the multiverse.
Only then, in a single, swift, and surprising stroke.
I will kill the man I love.
Damn you! I just wanted to see her one more time!
This is war, Superman.
This ends now!
Why are you fighting me? You're already dead!
I need more power! I need more strength!
It's time for you, your worlds, and your universes to die!
Iris.
Crisis on Infinite Earths and all names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics. Copyright 2009 DC Comics. All rights reserved.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net. where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.